Hey, this is Nomar Slevic, author of UFOs Over Maine, and you're listening to the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley, and before I get started with my interview with Tony Shapiro, I have a couple of announcements to make. Number one, I know you've been hearing me talking about it for the past 2 years, about my book that I'm writing, Spencer's Ghosts. It's about growing up in a haunted house, and it's finally in production. So in about 3 to 4 weeks, it will be ready for pre-order for the release date of October 1st. I'm really excited about that. Stay tuned for that, and you can go to www.authoralcooley.com. The second thing is, on October 26th at Brandy Station, Virginia, there's the Fleetwood Paracon, The Resurrection, is being held in Brandy Station, Virginia. You can go to eventbrite.com to purchase your tickets, schedule if you want to be a guest speaker or vendor. That's all available on Eventbrite. And I'll have more information on that coming up in the next couple weeks as well. I am going to be a guest speaker there and set up a vendor's tent to sell my book and other merch. I look forward to seeing you at the Fleetwood Paracon in Brandy Station, Virginia on October 26th. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Tony Shapiro right after these brief messages.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
Okay, I'm back with Tony Shapiro. Tony survived a horrific paranormal encounter at a very young age. And if you missed my episode with her on April 8th, go back and check that out. It's really a terrifying experience that she went through. And it was called My Paranormal Encounter. Well, she's back because of a few things have popped up since then. And I want to talk to her about that. Plus, she has a new story. And we're going to get into that. Welcome back to the show, Tony.
Thank you so much, Al. It's great to be here.
Your new story you sent me, it was like 8 pages long, I believe. It was My Malevolent Physical Attack.
That's right.
And this was a different occurrence that happened than the one you sent me. And we'll get into my dream about your story. I want to get into your story. I want you to explain what happened, what led up to that night of the home you purchased after your mother passed away.
Well, I was probably about 50 years old, I think. No, excuse me. I take that back because I bought the house at actually 44. So, well, yeah, probably close to 50. I had already lived there for several years and nothing ever happened. I never even had a bad feeling when I walked in the house. I absolutely loved it. I didn't spend much time in that original bedroom because there was also a portion of the house in the back of the house that was added on, which was a really huge room that I used as a bedroom. And then off of that was a garage, but all of those were added later. Now, the bedroom that my dog and I spent the night in was, as I said, was one room that the only time I ever went in there was for clothes and that type of thing, or to use the restroom, because the restroom was in that, off of that room. You couldn't, there was the, it was the only bathroom in the house. So to use the shower and whatnot, I had to go into that room. But other than that, I never went in there. So one evening, I just wanted to do something a little bit different with my dog and thought, okay, well, we'll do like a little camping thing, you know? So I just grabbed a chaise lounge chair and I set myself up and I set her up by the window. It was just silent. Everything was silent, like just I can't even explain how quiet it was because it was so strange. We didn't, first of all, I didn't have a TV or a radio in that room, but even everything outside was just like so silent. And for that area, it was kind of weird. But I shut the door. And again, I don't even know why I shut the door, but maybe I thought perhaps somebody might come by or something. Cause I'm, if you, as you know me, I'm a early sleeper, but because I get up way too early. But anyway, so it was probably, I can't tell you what time it is. I know it was middle of the night, and it was by this time it was dark outside. A little bit of light was coming, filtering through the blind from the street. And I was just fast asleep. My dog was fast asleep. She was a few feet from me. And I was just literally pulled out of that, off of that lounge chair like a rag doll. My feet didn't even touch the ground. And I, when you're asleep, you have absolutely no idea what's going on. I mean, obviously, the first thing that came to my mind was that there must have been an intruder in the room. But I could see nothing. I mean, even with just the small amount of light, I could still see my dog. And at the same time that this is happening to me, she's yelping and crying. So whatever is attacking me is attacking her too. So were there two intruders? But there's absolutely nobody there. My arms were just flailing around and trying to fight off whatever it was, and I never connected with anything. Again, I just like I was ripped up off of that lounge chair and kind of and tossed around, and somehow I made it to the door. Again, it's only a mere couple feet because this room was only, if it was 10 by 10, that's calling it large because it was very small. As you walked in through that room, directly to your left was the restroom, and then there was a portion of wall. And then from there was this narrow closet, very narrow closet that I kept storage in, same with the whole room itself. And I had a big, huge drafter's desk, probably about a, I would say it would probably be about a 200-pound drafter's desk, maybe more. I don't know. I had a dresser in there and I had an armoire. Well, as I started to say, when I was able to get my footing, I went for the door. And now this is a door that was never locked. It didn't even have a lock. And I couldn't get it open. I couldn't budge it, no matter how hard I tried. I kept trying to open this door and open this door. And for the life of me, I couldn't budge it. I don't know how many seconds I spent there, but I was pulled away from there. And still, I don't know what is going on. My dog is just freaking out. And I was taken, and from there, I was like thrown into the bathroom, straight into the bathroom. And in the bathroom, I had a ceramic like towel holder. And I mean, I was slammed up against the wall in there again, still thinking there might be somebody here, but I know there, I'm not hearing any voice. I'm not hearing anything like that. No words were ever spoken. It's not like I felt actual hands. It was more like a force. And so this, whatever it was, slammed me against the wall, and I broke that ceramic towel holder. And I'm telling you, I was in so much pain. I just sunk down between the toilet and the shower, and I, out of breath, in pain, not, thinking, oh my gosh, what's next, But you don't really have any thought other than what the heck is going on. And then of course, I was holding my ribs. I got thrown into that thing really hard. And I mean, I barely got air back into my lungs, and there's no other way to put this, but I wasn't exactly pulled out. I was more like swooshed out of that room, of that bathroom, lifted again, thrown around again. And now this time I was tossed straight head first into that narrow closet. And I know I sustained, at least this is my opinion, that I sustained a concussion because there was a lot of things in that closet that, because I went in head first, I hit my head on. And big things like, some of my former music equipment, suitcase, hard shell suitcases, just stuff, From there, I mean, I don't even know if I, how many seconds I had from that point before I was pulled out. Literally, I mean, this is like a horror movie coming to life, and I'm the star character because I was just pulled out again, now this time by my ankles. I don't know what point I lost consciousness, but I did. And when I woke up, my dog is still, she's just running around looking for a way to get out, poor darling, and still whimpering, and crying and begging for help, basically. And I'm just laying on the floor and trying I open my eyes, and I'm scared to open my eyes because I don't know if it's over. Is there anything else? And the door is closed. The door is closed. But when I finally get up a little bit, it wasn't easy. Let me tell you, I was in so much pain. My eyesight was blurred. Just trying to stand on my legs was pretty difficult because they felt like rubber. I looked a little bit around, and I'm telling you, everything in that room was absolutely destroyed. Everything was destroyed. From the drafter's desk was flipped over, which I'm surprised my dog didn't get crushed by it. The armoire was splintered in pieces everywhere. Anything that could have been broken was broken. All the clothes and anything else that was in the closet, everything was strewn about everywhere. I mean, it was a wreck. It was like a tornado hit it. And I still was like out of it, not understanding what the heck happened, And as I barely got to my feet, I was holding on to the wall, either the wall or the dresser that was between the two, the bathroom and the closet. I don't know, but I stumbled my way to the door and opened it. And of course, my dog, bless her heart, she just darted out. Well, I had to sit outside. There was a chair, a living room chair that I had right outside that room. And I sat down and to get my breath, because I'm in so much pain and I'm dizzy. My eyes are not focusing very well. Finally got up from there and opened the door for her to go out. But thereafter, it was difficult for me to even walk past that room at all without thinking about what had happened that night. So I went ahead and would take, I ran in there and grabbed my shower things and would just sponge bathe in the kitchen and wash my hair in the kitchen. I wouldn't even go in there. My dog would never, since for the time, the whole time afterwards that we lived there, she wouldn't even cross the threshold of that room. And I lived there in a total of 14 years. So I was there quite a long time afterwards. The trauma, I mean, we both sustained trauma and everything else, but it was so difficult to live there, or to pick up even from the remnants of what was left. It took me probably a month, maybe more, to even just go in there and pick up little things here and there. And just rushing in there when I had to go to the restroom and rush back out. I didn't want to be in there. But it wasn't till later on that I had learned something that my neighbor had told me. Before I bought the house, there was a couple who had lived there. And what they did was they would have these fun little orgies and seances and other sorts of practices in my house. And she shared that with me. And I got to tell you, I was shocked and I was angry. Mm-hmm. Because in my opinion, whatever it was, it lay dormant in that room until I was at my most vulnerable state. And then it attacked because it never went anywhere else in the house. Now, why that room? I have no idea. I really don't. I have no idea. Because as I mentioned, I never had any kind of issue with that house. But then I didn't spend any time in that bedroom. Never did again, by the way, after that. Yeah. And so when she told me what they used to do, they would get a bunch of the neighbors or, the few that were interested in those sorts of activities. And they would all just hang out at my house doing who knows what besides what I mentioned. And I was just, like I said, I was just really, really angry about it. Because if I would have known, I never would have bought the house. That's basically it in a nutshell.
You sent me that story, and I set the file aside you sent me, and so I didn't really have time to look at it. Well, about a week ago or so, I had a dream that woke me up like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and like in a cold sweat, and that dream was a woman and her dog being tossed around this room. It came to, I mean, a pretty violent attack, and there was, and I don't know if it was you or there was another person sitting in the corner of this room crying like a lady. And I woke up, and then it was coming to me like there was something like a party or something that was happening in that house where seances and Ouija boards, and the things weren't closed. They didn't close these sessions out. I don't know if it was connected to your story. I don't know, but I went back to read your story. I'm like, oh my God, it's the same thing that my dream was. Basically, is what your story was with the seances, and they didn't close the session out. I says probably. It may has nothing to do with your story. I thought that what a weird, I hate to use the word coincidence, between my dream and your story. And so I thought I'd throw on a quick episode last week about the importance of closing out Ouija boards and seances and any other way you connect with the spirit, because it's very important to close that session out, close that portal. The lady you're talking to that had the house before you, and the things you said, like the ungodly acts they did in that house that may have left something open there. I think in the story that you sent me, it didn't happen right away when you moved in the house. It was a while after you bought that house,
Right. Several years.
right? So it took a while for, and you probably didn't have no activity up until that point.
No.
So my question is your dog, did she notice, so because dogs can sense things humans can't. Did she sense anything like act weird in certain spots of the house, or didn't up to that point, or was everything just normal?
Basically, as far as what I remember, everything was normal. But if I didn't go into a room, she wasn't going into a room. So she didn't really go in there at all either. I mean, she wouldn't go in there without me, for one thing. But from thereafter, after that had happened, if when I finally was brave enough to go back in there, even just to take a shower, she would just, like I said, she wouldn't even cross the threshold, and she would just sit there and cry till I was back out again. But did she have anything that was unusual? I don't remember one thing of her doing anything strange. So, I believe it just this just, it's a gut feeling that whatever it was, it just laid dormant somehow. Because I would expect that she would have noticed it first. But no, she was just a happy-go-lucky collie, and everything was good, but that till it wasn't.
For a spirit to actually toss you around, I mean a lot of energy to have built up. And usually, like when talking to certain clergy that's been on my show off the air, because a lot of times they don't want to really tell me stuff, because let's face it, some of them are still working, so they still have a job and they have people they answer to, and so they have to watch what they say. But off the air, it's a different story, and I can't put everything that people say on, because for their confidentiality, I don't want to dishonor that, because
Of course.
he was telling me that for any spirit, for any ghost, anything, I mean, you need energy. So I mean, even just to see a shadow figure, I mean, energy, it takes energy for anything. I mean, your spirit boxes are, they have to have energy. So what he's telling me is, if it's a like a malevolent attack, usually an evil spirit, something like you said was left dormant, sitting there for a long time. It's always been there. It's just waiting for, and he was telling me, these people that go into these seances or Ouija board sessions, and they pound their chest, and they want to act like they're the king of the world, and you're just provoking that spirit, and it doesn't attack you right away. So sometimes it lays dormant, and it'll pick and choose when it wants to attack. And sometimes it'll be a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, That's why he was telling me how important it was to close out these portals, because sometimes it doesn't just attack you, it attacks others that were in the room. It'll attack maybe future people in the house, and that would happen to be you. And And your poor dog that was tossed around.
Poor thing. She, whatever was happening to her, she was getting hurt, and that broke my heart. You mentioned, it needs energy. I don't know if it was drawing energy off of me, you know, since I'm somebody who has had a lot of paranormal encounters. These are, you know, my paranormal encounter and this and the one we're sharing right now are the two violent ones or two, you know, evil ones. But I've had lots of other ones. I'll be writing about those soon too. But, you know, I don't know if because I've seen things since I was tiny, if I have it, what I do know is I believe I have an energy that does attract them. Now, if they feed off of my energy, I have no idea. Or feed off the energy from maybe perhaps other people that came in that house. I didn't really have a lot of company. But those that did come, you know, who knows? I really don't know if they're drawing our energy or they just find a way to draw it up from another source. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I had somebody write into me about, you know, your story, you know, and I'm thinking, just throwing this thought at you, do you think, because it could be like a couple possibilities here, you know, the spirit was from whatever the partygoers left open in that house, number one. Number two, or did you think maybe, according to this, to one of my listeners, maybe you carried that previous demon from your childhood, followed you to this house? And I'll have to ask you when you're on the show, because I don't know if it's, I don't think it's the same one.
I don't think so either.
Because you can carry spirits with you. So.
Yeah. Well, sure. But, you know, I don't think so, because to me, the fact that I can still see manifestations, I would think that this thing, that if it were the same thing, he would have been very delighted to manifest himself in front of me again. I really do. But quite honestly, anything is possible. As you know, in the paranormal world, anything is possible. It could have been just waiting for an opening. You know, who knows? But I don't know. I think that I still have more of a feeling that it was something that was left behind. But again, you know, honestly, who knows? Who knows? But I still, you know.
That's why I love this show, because, you know, I put out stories like yours or other people's experiences, you know, you know, on how many people can't sleep at night because of something that happened to them years ago.
Right.
And they're afraid. They're afraid to go to sleep because they don't want to experience that same horrifying event all over again.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, I have a lot of responses from your show and on the last one, that basically could relate to what you are going through, or you have trouble sleeping. I mean, and it probably stems from that you were just a little child and the first one happened, you know, and it carries on, you know. So are you more accessible to get to have more things happen to you? I don't know. You know, there's some people that have never no experience with a spirit ghost, or
my husband's like that.
I say that, you know, thank God you haven't.
Yeah. Know?
Because there's people who it's constant, and there's other people who's maybe once or twice, you know, like myself, but I've been around it enough to where I've been on investigations and did my documentary where I went to spots that were haunted, you know, and some were and some were not. And like I said before, you know, spirits pick who they want to connect with, you know. Unfortunately, that day in your house, you were the one they connected with. But
yeah.
How old were you at that time?
Like I said, I think I was, I wanted to say, you know, because I remember I bought the house when I was 44 years old. So I had to be close to 50. So say, you know, a good 5 years went by when it all happened. So maybe 2015, something like that. I don't know. I just know that I was close. I had already been there for several years. So, you know, and everything was fine. Now, when my neighbor had told me that, you know, I mean, to me, everything seemed to click as to what the heck happened, because I never told anybody. You know, it's just like my other story or any of the other ones thereafter, even some that I've had today, you know, small little things that happen. For the most part, I kept those things quiet till, you know, I don't know, I guess 3 years ago now, maybe 2 years, two and a half, 3 years, you know, when I started sharing publicly. And the reason for that is because for me, growing up my entire life, it was very lonely. You know, you didn't speak about these things.
No.
in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s for that matter. And although I come from a family that's very, I mean, every one of my family members, immediate family members, have had some sort of encounter. My grandmother, mother being the strongest with these things. Then they've since passed, and as my sister has passed as well. But I think it's also a trait that's inherited. Mm-hmm. I think it travels through generations. I know my son has had, you know, a few encounters, and then he told me, he said it was just a few weeks ago or so, he said, thank goodness I haven't had any since, you know, such and such date. And this is several years ago. Thank goodness for him. And I said, good, you know, because it does travel through generations. And this is something that I've been learning, and to learn things is very, very beneficial. But the reason why I do this, and the reason why I tell about it, is especially because I was alone, and other people might feel that they're alone as well at times with what they're going through, and they're not alone, and they're not crazy. And it's for those of us who've encountered it, it's quite natural, even though it isn't, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like you're saying, back in the 60s, you know, who do you go talk to? Because you didn't have social media.
No.
I mean, today you have what? Google, you have YouTube, you have TikTok. You can go and you can put anything on there and you're going to get a response. Back in the 60s, what did you do? You went to the library. You try to look up whatever you could in the encyclopedias to see books that maybe people had experiences that you were going through. But who you talk to? Like, I couldn't talk to my parents.
No.
Because they didn't Mm-mm. believe. And every time I brought it up, I was crazy, you know, talking nonsense. And who do you talk to? I mean, and the people that had experiences in our house, it was always my fault. You know, so I talked to them. So I must have said something to them, or I says, you know, uh-huh. it's my mother's brother. It's my dad's brother. It was, I mean, people had experiences in this house, but it seemed to always come down to it was my fault. You know, only person I could really talk to was my grandmother and a couple of friends of mine. But I love my grandmother because she had one of these people from the old school that believed in superstitions. She believed in. She had her own remedy she made up.
That's wonderful.
So like you're saying, so in the 60s, it was a whole different time.
Yeah, I think it was that way even in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But then for me, the reason why it probably was too is I wasn't going to tell anybody, you know. I mean, it would be less than a handful. Even today, it's still the same people, less than a handful of people that actually ever knew until now, you know, right now I'm just talking about it all the time. Because it's liberating for me, and I hope it helps somebody else too, you know, anybody, you know. Because it's hard. It's difficult to be by yourself in that world.
Your woman in this house, your only thing you have with you is your dog.
Yeah.
I give you credit for, you know, buying a house on your own, buying it and going through this, and you want to enjoy one certain, like we called it when we were younger, indoor camping, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing.
Right. So you set up a sleeping bag or something in the uh-huh. one room, and you and uh-huh. my sister and I and my brother, we would just step all night, and we called it indoor camping anyway. And so you had to do things to, I mean, you didn't have, like I said,
it was our entertainment, right?
Right. What did you do? I mean, and God forbid you had a paranormal experience, because.
Well, I had some in between the first and that one.
Besides your sister. I mean, who else did you have to talk to?
My sister. I didn't tell my sister about my first paranormal encounter until almost before she passed away. I mean, I kept mine like in a file way in the back of my mind. I don't know if you did the same thing. Mm-hmm. You just didn't bring it out and share it. It's not a nice opener.
Right. It's just like writing my book. I thought it'd be easy writing this book. I'm going back in time. I'm sharing some experiences that happened in and outside that house. So during this time period from between 1967 and 1971, show my age now, but 1967, 1971. So I'm sharing this as a 12-year-old boy in 1967. So what do you do? I didn't write none of this stuff down, so it's all up in here. So I'm thinking back on writing this book, there's a couple of times in a couple of those chapters, I had to actually stop and walk away because now I'm reliving some vivid experiences that I didn't want to really touch, you know, that I haven't touched in years. When my wife read the manuscript when I was done, she said, did this really happen? I mean, did some of these things really? I says, you know what? It's hard to explain. It may sound a little more elaborate in the book. I said, but they actually did happen, you know, so.
Yeah.
I won't go into the whole thing, but, you know, and yours is probably the same thing. So when you're looking back on what happened to you as a child and writing about it in your blogs or magazine, it's tough to relive that experience, you know, and
it is
because I can actually writing this book when we were shot at, and I won't go the whole thing, but in this garage, and we ran upstairs in my friend's house because the shotgun blast blew out the whole garage door, and we
had
so we had seen the shadow figure move in front of us right before that shotgun blast. All three of us, the whole inside of the garage is peppered with
gunshots.
So I mean, it's from wall to wall. Everything behind us, the speaker cabinet we're holding, was peppered with holes. But me and my other two buddies, we were not hit one time. So,
wow, your angels were watching over you.
Right. So I called up my guardian. So we were upstairs and hiding because we don't know if this guy's going to come upstairs in the house.
Oh, my gosh.
I can smell that gun smoke.
Oh,
so it's like,
that's terrifying.
So it's really the gunpowder. I could smell it up in the split level. And so writing this book, you know, taking me back to those days, and that's just one experience, you know. So those four years, almost like a living hell. But then when we moved out of that house, I don't know how you felt when you moved out of that house. You loved it and you hated it. Like, it's hard to explain that you had that terrifying experience, but you hated leaving that for something. You had an attraction to that house. When leaving that house, I know we're moving on to a better home, but it was like, it's weird because I had like a connection with the younger spirit in that house.
I had no regrets of leaving. I couldn't
wait to yours was out. All terrifying. Yours was violent. I can honestly say ours was never a violent attack to my sister, my brother, myself. But there were people in the house that had, I'm not saying it didn't happen, because it did happen.
Now, let me ask you, do you think that was a residual energy that you were experiencing, or did you actually see a manifestation?
I actually seen a manifestation at the very end. At the very beginning, I seen the girl in the window. And then keep in mind, the 4 years between that point and the point we moved out, I'd never seen her again. Now we've heard things happen, seen things happen. Actually see that spirit? No. Until the night before we moved out, I actually seen her apparition at the bottom of my bed. You know, so I actually seen her. So that not only lasted a few seconds.
It's like she's saying goodbye.
She never spoke a word. I never spoke a word. So it was like I'm just laying there in my bed, like my sheets up there, you know. And I'm like, I'm just looking, and she's, and who do you, I mean, I didn't even tell my friends this because like it was weird, you know. So I'm like kind of. But it was, I think, her way of saying goodbye.
Oh, wow. She's maybe because like you were kind of her connection to telling her story, you think, or something like that. I don't know. Oh, yeah. You got to let me know because I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to read that, Elle. I'm doing a lot of articles lately for The Haunted Attic. It's a publication that's basically in the UK, but anybody can read it. And so I've been really busy with that. It's not that I haven't worked on my book or haven't wanted to work on my book. The only thing is, it's almost like you said, when we start writing about our encounters, we have to go back into that portion. The fact that I've got the two worst written out is, it took me a long time to do that, more than 60 years.
This concludes part one of my conversation with Tony Shapiro. Please stop back in 2 weeks for part two, and I will have upcoming information and updates on the Fleetwood Paracon in Brandy Station, Virginia, and also updates on my book, Spencer's Ghost. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghost in the Valley podcast.